Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi there, friends. It's me, your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron. All right. As you are all most likely aware, the circumstances of the last couple years have had a profound impact on the theater world at large. Think about it. There was no single industry on earth quite as decimated by the pandemic as live theater and live performance. I mean, sure, we went to Zoom for readings and concerts and to TikTok for new musicals like Ratatouille, which, by the way, brilliant and fun. But theater just really isn't theater unless it's live. Outside of the pandemic, Broadway was called to face up to longstanding inequities, including race and inclusion for non-binary, queer, disabled actors, stage managers, creators, etc. There were marches, there were uncomfortable discussions had, and a crop of inspiring organizations committed to change and progression emerged. One such organization is the Black Theater Coalition, which is helmed by one of today's guests, my longtime pal T. Oliver Reed, who is currently starring as Hermes in Hadestown on Broadway. I wanted to open up our show to have a discussion with some of my favorite Broadway veterans to chat about not only the Black experience on Broadway, but the intersectionality of being a Black and queer artist in our industry today. Now, from where I sit, these conversations can sometimes be challenging, but they're always important and always inspiring. And with a group like this, full of joy. So I gathered together T, who is so fierce, by the way, if you did not know this, that while swinging Hadestown, went on at a moment's notice to play one of the Fates, normally played by a female actor. I mean, what? I should have talked to him more about that in this episode. We also had Laquette Charnel, who I toured with in Sweet Charity, who just closed down Mrs. Doubtfire on Broadway. The just plain silly talented Nick Rashad Burrows, who took his final bow as Ike Turner in Tina, the Tina Turner musical recently. And Antoine Hopper from A Strange Loop. It is a hell of a group. All incredible triple threats, all shining examples of Black excellence on Broadway, all fearlessly queer and in the spotlight. And, well, they're all just a damn good time. So let's open up our hearts and our minds and our funny bones for this really special episode of the Broadway cast. Now, before we get to it, make sure you subscribe to the show, rate us, review us, share us with your friends. Make sure you follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast. Follow me at Ben Does Broadway. And if you want to support us even further and get exclusive content, behind-the-scenes content made just for you, you've got to be part of our Patreon family. You can click the link in the liner note and you can support us on Patreon. We would just love it. All right, it's time to talk to these fabulous friends. Let's go on with the show. Oh, you've got to love a jingle. Jingle, jangle, jingle all the way. You've got to love a jingle. Hi, everybody. Here I am. I'm your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and I'm so excited to be in the room with these four, dare I say, legends. Yes, I do dare say. This is about as hot a group as we're ever going to have on the show. And that's no offense to all the other panels that we have had or will have in the future. But this is pretty epic. So let's say hello. Recently finished his run as Ike Turner in Tina the Musical. You've seen him on Broadway in King Kong, Kinky Boots, touring the country with Something Rotten. Nick Rashad Burrows is here.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Nick!
The people love him.
Hey,
Nick. Oh. Nick, tell me a little bit about closing night with Tina. What were the emotions there?
It was such a magical night. I mean, it's been a part of my life now for 3 years. I was there the first opening when Oprah escorted Tina Turner herself in. And then I was there. And then to make my final bow as Ike Turner at the end of that journey. I mean, it was just like, this was the chapter of my life that I'll never forget. And I'm very happy. So, yeah.
It's amazing. And I'm so happy that the world got to see you elevated to that principal role on Broadway where you deserve
Thanks,
to be,
love.
Where you should be. Also with us, how many Broadway credits can one lady have? She's appeared on Broadway in Mrs. Doubtfire, Liz Estrada Jones, Memphis, The Lion King. What am I forgetting? It's LaQuette Charnel Pringle. Hi, LaQuette.
Hi, love. What up, what up?
So many of the Broadway shows. You recently closed a show as well with Mrs. Doubtfire. Just quickly, how, in a nutshell, what are the challenges of trying to do an 8-show week with a toddler at home?
Quickly, it's, am I allowed to curse?
Yeah. We love it.
Okay, great. I got the thumbs up. It's bad shit crazy is what it is. That is fucking nuts. It's what it is. But, you know, it's cool when you're on, like, the Today Show, the morning shows and whatnot, and your kid sees you on TV and they're like, wow, like that's where you've been. Okay, that's cool. Like it was a really humbling and exhausting, but cool experience to do.
Yeah, and sleep, ha ha. We all can take sleep. You gave that years ago. For a full and rich life, that's what you did.
Right.
Also with us, by the grace of God, currently starring in A Strange Loop on Broadway, the Tony-winning mega hit. He's also appeared in Hair on Broadway. Antoine Hopper is here.
Yes!
Oh, I can't tell you how glad we are that Antoine's here. He's
yes,
made it. Hi, sweet baby.
Hi, everyone.
And you look fabulous. The people can't see you, but you look fantastic.
Wait, you can't see
me? Oh, I can see you. I can see you. Yeah, we can see you.
Oh,
listen, that eye.
The general
public. That delightful eye. That are you wearing an eyelash this early?
That's not eyeliner, honey. That's called talent.
Oh. Hold on. We're putting that on t-shirts. That's not eyeliner.
That's called gorgeous.
That's
and on the back.
That's called.
Antoine.
Yes.
Antoine, in three words, describe life at A Strange Loop right now. Amid all the buzz and the hullabaloo and the...
Unreal, incredible.
Phenomenon.
And fast.
Yeah.
Quick.
Coming at you hard from all angles.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting, though. What an exciting thing to be a part of. What an exciting movement to be a part of.
Yes.
Glad you're here. And talk about Broadway credits. What do we have, T? Do we have 10, 11, 12? What are we at? Broadway credits.
Who, me?
Officially 13.
Oh.
Work.
That's you, Antoine. Come back. Yes. Yeah, let's go back to Antoine. We're not done yet. We're not done.
The Oliver Reed, who's currently starring as Hermes in Hadestown, Once on This Island, Mary Poppins, Sister Act, The Wedding Singer, 13 Broadway shows, truly legendary. T, I think we were all so thrilled to see you take over the role of Hermes. What was that like? You were swinging the show and to be bumped up. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's been great. I mean, I think similarly to what Nick said, it's like, it's felt like 3 years of understudy rehearsals of watching, and then to be able to take over the role has been a joy. I can't say enough good things about it, about the experience, about falling in the footsteps, but making my own path, you know, following Andre. Mm. And still being there and helping the next Mrs. Hermes, the one and only Lilias White, as she finds her way into the role. I mean, it's been great.
Fun.
And and still giving notes to people on stage, because I can be on stage doing a show and still spot you on the other side of the stage not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So you
I
know,
I absolutely believe
nobody.
I believe that's true. Yes. I'm not trying to do anything wrong if T. Oliver's watching. All right, now, quickly. We live in a world where we get to do not just our Broadway shows, but there's so many other things going on. There's charitable events, and there's concerts, and there's readings, and there's workshops, which I don't know why Broadway people love to do while they're doing an eight-show week. But we just can't help it. More is always more. Where have your lives, the four of you, where have you intersected before? Everyone
oh, just from meeting?
Yes. Anyway, well, you're like, well, Nick,
well, you know, honey, like Nick... it's a community. We just,
yes.
It really is such a community of all, like when a whole bunch of weirdos that come from wherever they came from and all like come to New York. And I mean, us being like the black weirdos that like musical theater, we all we latch onto that. The people that we don't know, we'd be like, oh, I got to know who that is eventually. So who are you? And we become yeah. friends. So at least for me, that is my connection yeah. to everyone here.
Yeah. We make yeah, it our business odd, like, to know each other.
Yeah, like we've like none of us have, at least I've not worked with Laqued or Antoine. Nick and I just worked together on a reading a few months ago, but after like, and I'm old, and I've been here for a minute, but like the idea like that never like actually been in shows with these three amazing people, these human beings, is so odd. But we all know each other because we hear each other's names and we know each other's faces. So when you see each other, there is always that, you know, there is something that feels familial about seeing each other, and not that way. It's like, oh, this is, we got to fight for this job. We got to do this. It's like, oh no, somebody, it's always that like yeah. someone's going to show up. It's like somebody's getting the job today. It's going to be one of us because everybody's going to turn it out. Everybody, yeah. all these people are going to turn it out. Everybody's got their song. They got their point shoes ready. They're ready to do it.
Not well, the point to. Those boots have been away for some time.
That's the drama about this group, though, is that all four of you do absolutely everything at a level that is simply bonkers. All right. Want to jump in with a little warm-up. Let's warm ourselves up and get comfortable. We have a little game that I think originally I was calling Two Truths and a Lie, and that's not how this worked out. This ended up being some truth and maybe a lie, but I've got some for each of you. And the challenge here is for everybody who I'm not talking about to guess which statement about an onstage mishap is true. Here we go. Let's start with our good friend Laqued, shall we? She's our good friend. All right, Laqued. Try to keep your poker face.
What
on.
Up?
All right.
Oh, God.
Here are your three yeah. options. Laqued says that she had a dress strap break while she was standing center stage. Out came the ladies in a weird show bra. She went on the number holding her dress in place. Or she dropped her makeup powder on a subway track while running late, and she had to set her face with bronzer for the show that day, and looked like a disco ball in exactly what the cast called her afterwards. Or her wig nearly fell off during a show. A cast member grabbed her by her costume, turned her around, and readjusted the wig to save the show. Which is true? Is it the dress strap? Is it the powder and the bronzer, which I would like very much to see? Or is it the wig going off? I want to start by saying that wigs falling off of people's head during live theater is my favorite thing in the world.
Nothing it's a platform.
Nothing takes you out of your suspension of disbelief quite like somebody's hair falling off.
It's so true.
It's very true.
All right, what do you guys think? Which one of those things is true?
I'm going to go with the dress.
We have one vote for the dress.
Is that A, the first one?
That is A, yes. Me too. That's A. Okay.
Also, two, because three. One, yes. Oh, because only reason because listen, look, most black people ain't walking around with bronzer because we already bronze, so that's a no.
Yeah, and somebody's gonna help up with the makeup.
No, I'm going with A.
All right, you've all voted for A, but here's the catch: both of the other things except A were true. I made the thing about the dress up.
Look, quick, first of all, why are you
moving? You dropped your makeup directly in the middle. You were that unlucky that it fell directly in the middle, just like all
directly?
Your makeup.
Directly? Like, friend, when I tell you there was like NW45 on the platform, on the tracks, shoe, gone. And it's so funny you were saying like there's always somebody who can help you with makeup. I was the only black dark-skinned woman in my show, so there was no one else to help me out with makeup in the show. Yeah, so Bronzer had to be the one. That was the only random thing that was in my bag.
What show was it?
For show. It was Lysistrata off Broadway.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Back to photos.
Not even Atu had something he could have.
Atu could Liz not help Michael. Me this day.
Thank you, Liz.
I called him out.
Liz had a mind right. Liz had the mind right. Liz was like, I'm in New York. I'm going to be black. And I'm going to go out here with a lash and y'all going to like it. And that was the truth.
Yes. Yes.
I had no hope.
That's crazy.
And your wig almost fell off, too, which I love that somebody had the wherewithal to grab you and adjust your wig. That's a true friend.
Yeah, well, I mean,
true friend
I'm
will
a
help
petite,
you put your wig
I'm
back
a petite
on.
Little thing, but I can, you know, the upper back, like, move. So that wig just kept going like this.
What show was that?
And that was not the day. That was Sweet Charity.
That was Sweet Charity.
Oh, that'll do it.
And was your wig the same as
that? That hand.
Was your wig the same wig that you wore on tour?
That was the same wig that I wore on
tour.
So
it's a lot of wig.
It was significantly heavier. It was a lot of hair. It was a lot of hair on a very small person. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. But, you know, it's all good.
Between tour and Broadway, the wigs are heavier. Okay, and that's everything we ever needed to know and more about Laquette Chardell. Moving on to Antoine. All right, Antoine says that a cast member missed their entrance and everybody went quiet on stage. So he started saying their lines for the rest of the scene. They made it on stage right before they were supposed to sing. A. B. Huh. Antoine thought he missed an entrance cue. He tore through the dressing rooms, knocking things over, and burst onto center stage in a full guard costume, only to realize that he hadn't missed the cue at all. He was very early and was interrupting a very intimate scene between the leads.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Forgot the lyrics to his song and began meowing his way through. This went on for an entire verse. Meow, meow,
okay,
meow.
Okay, so all
meow,
of these
meow,
are true.
Meow.
I feel like all of these are true.
It's giving
I don't,
these
I don't,
all
I don't, think,
big
I don't think there's a lie.
Antoine, why are they calling you out?
Because you're so, the thing is that if Antoine were to meow for a whole song, that song would be so ill.
Oh,
the coolest song anybody ever heard on a Broadway stage.
It would be a beginning, middle,
dead.
And end.
You
yes.
would be dead in the house. Ooh. It would be so dope.
Thank you.
All right, make your choice. Cast your votes.
I'm going to go with B. That was the interrupting an intimate scene. Yeah?
That's right. Yeah, interrupting the scene.
I'm going to go with B.
I'm going to go with B as well.
Oh, all right.
As being true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
T?
I
still think all three as well. I'm not going to go with B so that we are all not all choosing the same thing. So I'm going with meow. I think I'm going to say you came out and gave us a full meow.
And the answer is B. He burst through the dressing room in a guard costume with a giant sword during Aida at the Muni. And ran on stage.
Antoine Hopper, did you see how you came up and I knew because you came into the you came onto the system today. You did it today.
Ben.
Yes.
You should share the news with Laquette what show that was.
Laquette, that was Aida at the Muni, which you were also in.
I was just about to say, I feel like I saw this happen.
Yes! And Lisa Simone was Aida, and she went...
Yes! But just Simone is like...
I went...
Seething.
Yeah.
But still trying to be in the moment. I was like, oh,
it was a scene between Will Chase and Lisa Simone when they first met.
Is that just a gentle backup? Or is that like a nod to her and be like, I meant to do that. Bye-bye.
Honey, you get your ass off the stage. It's Lisa Simone. she was like, get off. And I was like... But it was so uncomfortable because you know how big that Muni stage is. You can't miss me and keep Tyrone.
Yeah, no one's getting off into the wings in 2 seconds flat.
No, it took us
a long way to run
off. It was 30 seconds.
Yeah.
A jog.
But let's talk about Lisa Simone. She went by Simone when I did the show with her. Let's talk about that gospel God's Love Nubia moment that she likes to throw around every once in a while.
It's like Anita Baker.
Exciting stuff. All right. T. Oliver Reed, here we go. T. Oliver Reed says, it was once choreographed to run across stage and dramatically swing on a pole. He jumped, missed, fell, tore his oblique, and finished the number. Or he got kicked straight in the head by a fellow actor during a number. Let's say that actor was, I don't know, Richard Blake. Or broke a heel on stage right before a big dance break, took off both of his shoes, threw them into the wings, and did the break. The crowd went wild. Is it
the, where's the lie? Pole dance?
Where's the lie?
Where's
the
lie?
Is it a pole dancing mishap? Is it getting kicked in the head by Richard Blake? Wild man that he is. Or throwing your heels into the wings and killing the dance break to the amusement of the audience? Make your choice.
I'm going to go with A and wonder if I'm going to find out some questionable thing that happened to you.
All right, we've got an A and a B. Antoine?
I'm going to go with A as well. I would go with C if I was confident in knowing if T. Oliver Reed danced.
Oh,
no,
wow.
I'm saying if I knew.
Wow. I'm saying
Antoine and I don't really know each other.
We are
mess.
And now a mess.
He don't mean nothing by that. Y'all see y'all acting. Antoine and I are just fine. Like we have seen each other. We are just meeting today. Antoine, I know that was no harm, no foul. I know what you're saying.
In this world, this was, of course, I'm referencing La Cage aux Folles.
Yes.
Right. But the truth is that both A and B are true, and I made C up entirely. But the answer for you, Nick, is that T did hurt himself, and I'll let T tell you about
it.
Oh, no. It was, years ago, doing the pre-Broadway Romeo and Juliet that Terrence Mann had written. So we're in Minneapolis, we're doing this number. Christopher Demboise was a choreographer in this big opening number where the Capulets and the Montagues having this fight, and all the stage actually looked like sort of a first version of a sketch from Hamilton. Like, it was all these, like, around, like, poles around the stage, blah, blah, blah. At one moment, did this, like, barrel turn, then run across the stage and swing around a pole to come right back on stage. I swung, and my oblique said, nope. Fell down right on the stage, and the energy was so high that I didn't think anything about it. Finished, went and swung somebody else around, ran around, finished the number, then went back off stage. It was like, and that was it. Torn oblique.
Sans an oblique. Damn.
Yeah.
And that's such a real thing, man. Adrenaline can make you forget
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, especially if you're doing something crazy athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, and also probably, you know, I probably had not had any water that week because, you know, you out on the road and drinking and enjoying. But I tore the oblique, had to, like, wrap it up for the next couple of days. But literally, you're like, it's like it's all stabilization. Like, you can't get out of bed. You can't cough. You can't do anything without those obliques, like, get involved. So there's that. And then in Wedding Singer, Richard H. Blake kicked me in the head. Had to have surgery. He tried to paralyze me.
No!
He tried to paralyze me.
No! Not he tried to take you out, honey.
You see that, babe? You see that scar right there?
Today.
Did you really have to have surgery?
Oh, I thought you knew. I have a spinal fusion from C4 to C7.
What?
Oh my God.
Yes.
This just in, All Points Bulletin. I did not know.
Clearly he did not mean it, but in the first number of the second act, All About the Green, we were in these two circles, and everybody was doing tilts, and we were supposed to be inner circle between the outer circle. And something, the circles were off one night. We all tilted and kicked. He kicked. Yes, Antoine, I can tilt.
I'm gagged.
I was just going to say, did you hear? He also said barrel turn, Antoine. Barrel turn.
I can do a barrel turn.
That was when I was young. That was young. But no, but like he kicked me in the side of the head, and I was like, Richard, just kick me. Didn't think anything of it. Then a couple days later, had no feeling in this arm. By the end of the week, was trying to do one of the numbers and started to fall and couldn't catch myself. And so I went to the doctor the next week. I was like, this kind of happened. He's like, oh, yeah, that was quadriparesis. You cannot do that show again until you have surgery. So.
Oh, what? God. To find it out that way.
Now, if you think that theater isn't a blood sport, now you know. All right, I've got one more. We've got to get Nick's in there. Nick.
Yes. All right.
Accidentally threw a basketball into the audience and hit a castmate's grandma in the face. Was hit. The next one. He was hit in the face by a rogue basketball while singing a number. Or C, as a swing, grabbed a basketball out of another actor's hand when he got confused about which trick he was track he was on for. So there are basketballs involved in every option here. Yeah. Grab lots
I'm gonna
of things.
Say what was the one where you grabbed the actor's ball? I'm gonna go
as
with
a swing,
that
he grabbed a basketball out of another actor's hand because he thought it was his when he got confused about what track he was on for. Or was he hit in the face by a basketball? Or did he hit grandma's face?
You took somebody's ball. You took somebody's ball. I would do it.
Not proud.
Give me your props.
I would do it.
Yes.
Are we all voting for that?
No, I'm voting for hit somebody's grandma in the face with the basketball. That's A,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's A. Yeah. Antoine?
What show is that, Nick?
Songs for a New World.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not going with that. Let's see. What was B again? Because I lost connection. Please, real quick. I'm sorry.
No problem. He was hit in the face by a rogue basketball whilst singing a number.
And C
was as a swing, grabbed a basketball out of the hands of another actor when he got confused about which track he was in.
C.
D?
C.
Oh, C. I was like, you can't. There's no D, Antoine. C. Okay, great. Turns out, Nick, tell him the truth.
The answer is A. My friend's grandmother, who was very excited about seeing our production of Songs for a New World, had finally got in the front row of the audience, and I'm singing Steam Train from Songs for a New World. And you know they have a lot of basketball. The song is about being a basketball player, and we had this, like, you know the basketball trick where you bounce the basketball up from this part of your arm? Well, yes, you have to do like that to do it. You have to do like that. So I threw it directly into the face of a sweet, and I'm talking old, babes. She's old.
Yeah.
And I threw it directly to her face, and I stopped singing. There's a spotlight on me. I'm like, steam train. Oh, and then I have to walk off the stage, grab the basketball, and I'm like on mic being like, I am so sorry. And she was like, it's fine. Keep going.
She's talking to you from the audience.
From the audience.
So she's all right.
Complete disaster.
I love that she's assumed responsibility for it because she got front row seats. You keep singing, darling.
I have to apologize to my friend's grandmother that came to see her, and I attacked her with a basketball.
Listen, I've thrown jump ropes into audiences. I too have thrown basketballs into audiences. But to my defense, who gave me those things in the first place?
Yeah, that choreography is risky. Idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
risky choreography.
All right, so let me ask you guys. We could do this all day, and I really want to, but I know I can't keep you all day. Just very, very quickly, there's no way to really truncate this, but I'm always interested to know when you were bit by the theater bug. Was this from childhood? When did this spark for you? Who did you see on stage? What did you see that you said, this is for me? T?
Well,
oh, or Nick.
Nick.
Helping everybody out. No, go.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was from childhood. Like, I had been, grew up singing in the church. My guidance counselor in elementary school saw that I had like some facility to sing and dance and all. So asked me if I would audition for something at our local little theater, and did that and started just doing any of the local shows or anything that were going on in my hometown of Gastonia, North Carolina. And then the first shows I saw that came through Charlotte were Bubblin' Brown Sugar, The Wiz, and Annie. And those are the ones that were like, oh, wow, you should be paying attention to this. But it wasn't until I actually got to New York after school and everything, and I saw the revival of Guys and Dolls that was Nathan Lane and Faith Prince and all those in it. That was like, I have finally had that moment of seeing the people on stage and like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to be doing this. It's time for you to be doing this here and not not regionally, not in my hometown, anything else, but it was that moment I had that, like, oh yeah, this is where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, well, at 13 Broadway shows later, I think the proof's in the pudding that you were right about that, where you were supposed to be. Nick?
Well, for me, I got into theater really late because I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. My only goal was to sing in choir and play football and run track. And so I knew that I needed to get a scholarship to go to school. So I had a very, very, like, serious, detailed goal to get a scholarship in track. It was originally football. I hated my football team. They lost every game. I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't want to be a part of that at all. So And it's funny that I was going to go to college so much for track. I didn't like running track at all. Your parents tell you you're good at something and you stick to it.
Sure.
And so I remember while I was in Alabama, still like running track and playing football, being the height of my life. And I saw a production of Ain't Misbehavin' that toured in, and I always sang in church and I always wanted to sing, but I saw theater for the first time when I saw Ain't Misbehavin' in Alabama. And with Reuben Studdard,
Teddy Bear,
the most famous person from Alabama. So, of course, my mom got tickets, and my mom was so sanctified, and she was not going to this anyway. And she was like, "Oh, well, you can just here give this to my kids. Let them go. Is it okay for kids?" And they didn't know, and so we didn't even know what we were going to. We thought we were going to a Reuben Studdard concert. And so when I sat in the audience and I saw all these elegant black people in suits and all these women that looked like every woman in my family singing and just like, it was magical. And then I remember the next day I was like, I looked up the Tony performance of them. And then I saw a list of other Tony performances and I was like, what the hell is this? And then that's how I literally discovered theater, was like seeing that show. And then being obsessed with the show, realizing that it was Broadway. It was a Broadway show, and then finding other Broadway shows. So Ain't Misbehavin' has a very special place in my heart. It's what made me find theater.
Have you had the opportunity to
I actually got the opportunity to choreograph it in Alabama in the same theater that Neil Carter grew up doing theater. Because she's from Alabama.
Nice.
Well, and my ex-girlfriend is my ex-girlfriend's aunt is Neil Carter, and I was very close to them growing up, and they always would tell me, Neil would love you. You liked it because they're in Alabama, and I'm the only weirdo in the entire town. They were like, you just loud and theatrical. You just like her. She would like you. We don't know what to do with you, but she would. Yeah. So I have a special connection to Neil Carter. Yeah.
I just want to clarify one more time that your ex-girlfriend was Nell Carter's niece. All right, we all have to process that for a while. Laquette?
Wow. I'm shooketh. These are some incredible stories.
Shooketh.
I would say the first time I saw the Tony Awards, I was watching it with my late grandma, and I saw Damn Yankees. And I was like, what is that? Like, they were doing the What a Game number. And I was like, that looks awesome. I want to do that. That looks like fun. But, you know, you're a little black kid in Dallas, Texas. And you're like, I probably wouldn't do that. It was a whole stage of white people. It's fine. Moving on. And then I saw Lion King. And I was like, oh, you can do this. All right. I want to do it. What they're doing, that looks really incredible. It was fascinating to see impediment. It was incredible to see, like, literally acting 101 of these incredible humans becoming animals and having these lives that were so rich and complex and tactile and emotional. And I just. It makes me like tingly just even thinking about watching them from Bass Hall and back home and seeing Lioness Chant come out of the wing for the first time when you're like 12, 13 years old. Like that's life changing right there. So that's my jam.
Well, how did that feel when you took the stage in that very show? Was that a profound
moment? How I cried? every night.
That's what I mean. Yes. Well, how you cried every night.
Yeah. But about that moment where, like, I became the person who had to count all of the lionesses to get onto stage to start lioness chant. And I'm just like, 1, 2, 3. Like, it was really gnarly. And I won't say I bawled, but it was some thug tears for a solid week of my first performance.
I mean, I love those moments. Those moments when you can trace back and go, oh my gosh, if only I'd known. When did the theater bug bite you, Antoine?
I started wanting to be in theater when I saw a beautiful episode on 2020 hosted by Barbara Walters. And it was about Annie, the making of Annie in 1997. I was in seventh grade. And I remember we had just done Hans Christian Andersen at French Middle School, sixth grade. And we were about to do Wagon Wheels West. And I had seen this in the fall, and I had realized that I wanted to do that on and off stage. I wanted all of that drama in my life. And I just remember, like, when they went through the auditions, then they went through the rehearsal period, and then the Annie got sick, and then her understudy had to go on, and then where were they, or where they are now, and it was just thrilling. But I saw myself for the first time through watching that. So yeah.
And then did you go on to college for the performing arts then, Antoine?
I did. I went to Topeka West High School, and by the grace of God, I went to Carnegie Mellon University, and then I came here after graduation.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Besides you, the four of you being some of the most remarkably talented people I can even imagine existing, we have a wonderful intersection here of these wonderful Black and queer artists. And I want to talk a little bit about that experience. And I want to start with, how has your queer identity impacted your life in the theater in either negative or positive ways to this point?
Well, I'll jump in on this one. I don't know. I mean, now there are more queer and lesbian people who are out in the business. But when I was coming out, I didn't know any. First of all, I didn't know any other lesbians in musical theater, let alone Black lesbians. So for me, and how I was raised and how I was brought up, I thought that if I were going to be gay, I better be the best gay I could possibly be. So I tried to be as feminine as possible. I tried to put on the mask, the exterior of what will be most appealing to cis gay men who I'm auditioning for and who are giving me opportunities. What are they going to like most? And you know, for the better part of a decade, it really tapped into a lot of my insecurities. It tapped into, like, just like not feeling at home in my body, but somehow or another still feeling at home, because I was, as Nick has said, so far, you know, we're a bunch of weirdos, you know, really cool, talented, amazing, smart, brilliant weirdos. But I felt othered in an already small niche of people. So for me, the better part of the first part of my career, it was feeling ostracized and alone, and like I had no idea who I was. Really grateful that my wife is the dopest person that's ever walked this planet, and has been with me through all the transitions and helped me realize you can take this a day at a time. So I can sit here now and be really proud of the fact that I know a handful of lesbian, queer, bisexual, you know, out young Black and brown people in the biz. Like, that's a really beautiful thing to see now.
Yeah, and that was something that was on my mind.
I think
go ahead, Nick.
No, I was just gonna say, I think that things like that affect queer people in the business in a way that we undoubtedly don't talk about in safety of our jobs. Like, for instance, that is growing, thank God. But for instance, like when I was doing Kinky Boots, I was a lot smaller. I remember getting really skinny for it. And because I remember seeing in the audition process before it, I in college on my senior year, I like remember studying the fact that, okay, buff guys work on Broadway, and the way that they like people is if you're buff and if you dance masculine. So I was always like in the gym, and I was just like just newly discovering my queerness, but then realizing, oh, well, I can't show at all. And so then the first big audition I get was Kinky Boots. And then I realized that, oh, I've been trying not to be queer enough, and now I need to be as queer as possible. So I went on my little diet. I lost my little weight. I got snatched. And then I started to do all this to become this. And then I got the job. And then I realized from being proud of the job, this is what queer people do to other queer people, by the way, to call it out. From being proud of the job, I was limited and watched other people in this job be limited because of a show that they see me in. And I'm not trans. I am a queer person that likes to play roles that date women, date men, date anything. But here I am, all of a sudden, I'm only being able to be seen for trans women roles and drag queens for a solid year. I wasn't like during Kinky Boots. And then I had this, and then because of that, it moved me into another direction when I got to do Something Rotten, that I was like, ooh, when I come back to New York, I'm going to be buff as hell, and I'm going to be manly as hell, and then they ain't going to bring me in for no gay things. I'm just be like, boom. And you know what? I lucked out and did that. And then and then in realizing that I did that, I was growing, and that happened, I realized that I never want to do anything like that again, because the second that I started to notice a confidence in myself, in my queerness, in my masculinity, in my femininity, the second that I owned all of that was the second that I was able to be seen for both things. And so the reason that I only say that is because we do a lot of hindering ourselves to look a certain way so that we can be castable for something else. But that is always limiting us to be a part of an, not that there's anything wrong with an ensemble, but a part, that's the word that's coming in my mind right now. Instead of being somebody creating something that vibrates off of just you, because you're trying to fit, you're going to school to fit into a box. You're going to school to fit into this straight box. I'm working hard to fit in this gay box. As opposed to just being all facets of yourself and then letting the projects that are true to you come.
But Nick, that also becomes the issue with us, especially being Black and being queer, of feeling like we need to fit into a box, when if you want to be the beauty that you are and the star that you are, and I mean, and by star, I don't mean because the other people have noticed you finally. The star is the person you were when you walked, when you came onto the planet. You already were the star.
Yeah.
To be able to feel like to really fill out all of who you are, and to say, I'm going to be a little bit of this today, and I'm going to be a little bit of that next week, because that's a part of what all of these ingredients, that's a part of who I am, as opposed to, like, early on, someone's telling me, okay, you don't sit with your legs crossed because men don't do that. It's like, well, I was born with a penis and testicles, so I must be a man. At least that's what I'm thinking. And if I'm crossing my legs, then it's okay for me to cross my legs. And tomorrow, if I want to walk out with a skirt on, I can walk out with a skirt on, because that's how I'm feeling tomorrow. And today, if I want to put on a suit and a tie, I can do that too, because that's all of who I am. And to not allow myself, especially anymore, to be caught in those places. Early on, I'm totally with you. It's like for a lot of those first shows, I was the only Black man in the show, because they weren't hiring more than one of us. They just weren't doing it. It was just the one. Maybe there would be one Black male identifying and female identifying, but that was going to be it. And then you start seeing more shows and more opportunities. I mean, LaPrette, I don't know, like, when you first got here, like, there was a moment I got here, like, there were times, like, if you walk into a party and there were two or three of us there, it's like, oh, does one of us have to leave? Because there's only ever one black person in the room. So there was a lot of that was always going on. So there was also that kind of, like, not allowing yourself to really breathe and open up and really be who you are as a human being and an artist, because it was always like, I feel like I'm on borrowed time because I'm the only one for now. And then I think that was also a lot of times when new people came in the town, you know, came out of school and were starting to be seen by casting and getting some notice, that everybody was like, what's going on? Does this mean I'm not getting a job again? It's like, no, we have to make space for all of us. That's the beauty of, like, I think for me, that's the beauty of also where we are right now, is there's so many stories being told. So there's so many of us allowed to be a part of those stories, as opposed to, oh, no, we're just going to do this show again. And we're going to do the exact same casting we've done for the past 50 years, because that has always worked. So you're not going to work for this show because we already have the black man. We don't have to do that anymore.
And that was one of my questions on my list, was addressing this idea of tokenism within casting. For so long, and feeling that exactly what you just touched on, T, that we've got these two slots to fill, which is wild to me. Mm-hmm. So do you all feel that tokenism is something that is changing? Was it something that
it's changing? It's not through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
well, I think it's a little. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, say.
Well, I think that tokenism and colorism are kind of interchangeable within the world of casting, especially within the world of musical theater. I'm not going to put anybody's shows on blast, but my third Broadway show, we went from being cast specifically because we were dark skinned, we could be on this side of town looking like type people that would be discriminated against because of the amount of melanin in our skin, only to have many of the replacements, melanin not be as dark. And that shift for an actor of color becomes, to speak frankly, it fucks with your mind, because there's one thing that happens when you are a dark skinned person of color, is you go, I have one track. Great. There's one track in there for me. So then you start seeing less and less and less of people who look like you, and you start going, I don't know where the hell I fit in. I don't know if I could actually be in the one black show because none of them look like me. And I don't think that is something that a casting director who is not a person of color, one, can understand, or two, a creative team who has no other people who are people of color inside of the room with them to help them understand, listen, what story are we telling, number one, and number two, what are we doing about representation? Not only for this show, but hopefully for the progression of where we want the theatrical community to go, which is what makes this moment in time, coming out of the pandemic, coming out of America's racial reckoning, I think that's what makes this artistic time so poignant and so beautiful for artists of color, is because we're like, we've been here the whole time, and these are the stories that I wish that you could have been saying, so we didn't have to be counting how many of us were in one single room, how many of us were in one single audition. You know, we wouldn't be crabs in a barrel. Yeah, we would literally people.
And LaQuette, I think with that, it's also the thing that always aggravated me with Equity, wanting to know how many people of color were auditioning. It's like, I don't care how many are auditioning, how many are being hired? Because you can bring in 100 of us into a room to audition for a show, but if you're not actually going to hire any of us, and it was just about a quota, let me stay at home, let me save that headshot and resume, let me sleep late if you are not going to hire me. That's always an issue. I think with what you said, LaQuette, also, it's like, there's the conversation that has to be had, so that the entire creative team, and that needs to include casting as well, so that if a director and a choreographer have talked about what they think a show truly is and what they think a cast needs to look like, and casting doesn't know that, and casting just starts hiring people, then the cast starts having that moment of like, where do I fit in? Because the story that I thought we were telling is not the story that's being hired. It's not the new people who are coming in. So to make sure that everyone is on the same page with that, otherwise, and it also, I think it's also a little bit of that transparency that we keep talking about now. It's like, if we're going to be transparent, let's be transparent. Let's really understand what is going on and why it's going on and why this director is looking at it a certain way, or and why casting is falling suit or has ventured off in another direction or whatever it is, so that these stories, these new stories that we want to tell and the way that we want to tell them and we want to see them ring true from opening night to the last night of the production.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. Yeah, but tokenism has just always bothered me in a way. Well, the obvious way, but it's when you decide that you want to do theater, and you go to school for it. Most times, I studied all the exact same thing that my white counterparts have studied. So when I keep seeing shows that is just about like. About nothing but some about a story at work, but there's only one black principal, and we're supposed to believe that one black friend always, but and then they have that one black person that's there to understudy him in the ensemble. We're supposed to believe that the lead of the show couldn't, if it's about, I don't know, an accountant, why couldn't that story be like that? That is changing now, but it's changing in a sense of like, oh, all right, let's just make sure we fill the quota, as opposed to remembering all these amazing black artists that you know are great, literally did the exact same thing in school, this played the exact same roles in class, trained the exact same way that their white counterparts did. So it's so frustrating to see majority of Broadway, there's only a few little spots for black actors to really have an arc. To really have something other than a best friend, something other than like playing another black iconic person, like there are so many facets to us, and so the tokenism thing just bothers me because I am just so. Jordan Peele says, and I don't think this is offensive at all. He's like, the reason that I don't usually cast many white actors is because I've seen it. I would like to tell some, and the stories that he tells, it's not like some black trauma story or some queer trauma story. Black people go through a lot of other things that are not just racism and trauma from everything that you think. So it heals the world when more black people can actually see them being telling stories as opposed to only seeing themselves on Broadway as tokens.
Yeah, sure. Hey, but also it allows
so much broader.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you finally allow people to, again, to dig into who they are, you actually get to see people grow into those, you get to see people grow into all of their artistry. And that's the other thing that doesn't happen when you're looking at black queer artists as tokens and only the one over here and the best friend. You never get to fully see them examine a character and build a character and grow into that. So you look at some of our white counterparts who have been stars since they were 20, 21, 24. It's like, yeah, they've grown into these because they've been given those opportunities. When you let black or queer artists have those same opportunities to really start to develop characters and really understand what that is and grow and grow and grow, then we will have so many more spectacular artists and storytellers because they have been given the opportunity. And they've taken the opportunity to build and to continue to grow.
And the stages to be seen doing so. No show speaks to this quite as much as A Strange Loop does. I want to go back to Antoine here and pick your brain as to how your queerness, blackness has been a part of your experience and your journey in theater.
Well, first off, I have to applaud everyone on this panel for... taking the initiative to speak your truth and so eloquently. I'm a big musical theater nerd and I look up to all three of you. You all make me proud. And I think you just showed why. And that's because you are all in your own realm, a leader. And thank you. And thank you for continuing to speak your truth and the truth. And with that said, I specifically decided at Carnegie Mellon my senior year when we took the year course of the business of acting that my career will have nothing to do with my sexuality. My career will have everything to do with my ability and my talent. And I think it's unfair that us queer people have to talk about our sexuality. I'm starting a new trend and where I'm offended. How dare you ask me? Unless I get to ask you about who you sleep with, because I went to school for acting, not for being a queer man who acts. I am an actor. I play all and will play all things, including Eartha Kitt. I played her at Williamstown. I dare someone to knock on my door and come for me. I'm an actor. I can play a snake. Are you going to cancel me? So I'm saying in that realm, it's not fair just because Nick is a man that he couldn't play a woman or a drag queen. It's acting. To be fair, until A Strange Loop, me and my black self in musical theater, I decided that I would purposely do straight plays. And I don't mean straight in terms of sexuality. I mean no music. So people knew I could speak the text and speech because I knew that I was a triple threat. And I knew that they would try to put that against me and put me in ensembles, as I did at the Muni. The only black of a cast of 30 at Denver Theater Center 2, White Christmas. Hi, Patty Columbo. But all to say, the thing that I love
didn't
about
think I'd hear Patty Columbo's name today
up here is that we have and we are going to continue to do what we want to do, which God has put us on this earth. No cast director, no interview, no question can dislodge that. I will continue to play characters outside of myself because I am what we all are, and we can say it together. We are actors.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think that's exactly what these viewpoints that I wanted to be able to have a discussion about today. Well, I want to ask Nick about your pop music that you're putting out there. I'm obsessed with it. I love the grooves. I love the videos. And I love that there's not a lot of people doing what you're doing. And is there purpose or intention behind presenting yourself to the world as a pop star, as a queer black person, or is it just about the music? Does it intersect at all?
Well, like we were talking about earlier, I have all the theater is something that I found and fell in love with. But my original dream and like love was always doing music and being able to sing. And I've been writing songs since I was a kid, and I just kept it to myself. And I distinctly remember like realizing that I was leaning more into when I realized that I'm very queer and it's not changing. And I was always surrounded by people that don't necessarily understand that. I literally told myself, I was like, well, I can't be a gay recorder. I can't do that. I can't do that. And I kind of just kept it to myself. And so, like I was saying earlier, when I felt that like when I started to literally come into terms with myself, opportunities started happening. That was an opportunity as well. Like during the pandemic, I didn't like everybody has their aha moment in the pandemic that is like, I'm going to elevate or I'm just going to just do whatever it is and just make my own decision. Mine was a big elevation for myself. And it was kind of no fucks about what anybody thought. And I really genuinely have always overthought and cared about what everybody thinks. And I limited myself so many times from doing that. And I just made a song, used the connections that I have made over the years and realized that I have amazing connections. Anytime that I ever just like use what the work that I've always been doing and stop worrying about what someone would think, success would come out of it. I made a song, it did really well. Then other people started joining me to make my music life grow even more. And I've been able to be my queer self. And because of that, I have things, well, it would be a gag if I could say what I'm doing, but I can't really say yet. But like all that to say, whenever that comes out later,
it's still a gag.
Yeah.
It's still a full gag. Because Nick Rashad Burrs, you are doing the thing.
Yeah,
thank you, bro. But I'm saying this for the young queer artists that like really want to do their art and they just don't do it because we don't see ourselves being anything other than shamed or shaded from like, you know, and so I just didn't give a fuck. And I just did something. I just shared what I've already has been doing in my room. And it has fulfilled me in so many ways. And I'm so glad that you even brought it up that you like the music. Because it's just like, if you don't like it, it's for me. I just finally got the courage to share it with everybody else. So I'm happy that I love doing that it's successful.
I love that. Antoine, I want to ask you, what has been the kind of the coolest audience interaction or audience correspondence you've received since Strange Loop has opened?
I think other than Michelle Obama coming, I think it actually happened.
Casual.
Our most magical show was not opening. It was actually this past Friday when Queen Latifah, Gayle King, and Bevy Smith were all in the audience, which, by the way, the next day Questlove came. And it was just electric. Like, the audience gave, it was just, you couldn't hear anything at the Lyceum. And then to find out they were all, we didn't know, they were all in the audience and they lived. And Queen Latifah shared that it was her second time seeing the show. And Gayle King was fanning out when she met me and did the pose. Like, I'm gagged. Questlove was like, I gotta meet y'all. Let's do a picture. It's just like, whoa! And it's good for our industry because musical theater is an elite art form where it combines all of the best forms of art. So now people are starting to put some respect back on its name. So come see A Strange Loop.
Absolutely. And I want to give a shout out to Original Ideas as having commercial success too. I just think that's so important, and I'm so happy to see this wholly original piece have such an impact. Because we're running low on time, T, elevator pitch, where can we learn more about your organization, Black Theater Collective?
Black Theater Coalition. You can go to blacktheatercoalition.org and learn all about it. No, please. It's okay. There's so many organizations, and I've been around long enough to know that I'm not going to get my feelings hurt by somebody mispronouncing something or getting the thing wrong. All you can do is just correct them. So that we're all on the same page. Like these past couple of years have been about us really pushing the industry so that we can have more Black professionals working in positions that are actually writing checks and not only cashing them. I love cashing a check, but we have to have more people who look like us, who are producers and are directors and are general managers, who are casting, who have the vision and say, whoa, 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 this is the story we need to be telling. So that's a huge part of our organization, but you can go to blacktheatercoalition.org and look that up. That's it.
It's amazing.
Right, now, looking at us all, as Antoine put it, and I love this as kind of a cap to the episode, that we are actors. That's what we are. We're actors. We're performers. What are all of our dream roles?
Well, I'll jump in.
Go look wet.
Well, I would say that my dream... My dream role is being a writer. While I love being on stage, and I think that there's really the high that you get from it is just so incredible. I have been doing the very thing that Nick has been talking about and actually sharing the things that I've been writing and the artistic voice that I had to sit on for a really long time so that I could just fit in that by sharing what it is that I'm writing. I feel a high that, dare I say, tops being on stage. So for me, my ideal role is that of the writer and letting more stories that have resonated with me come to the stage for amazing actors to perform.
That is beautiful.
Yes, please, Laquette Charnel.
Yes.
We're going to give that a big old stay tuned. I love that. T, how about you? I know you're working on something very cool right now.
I'm always working. I tell you, it's been so good. I've learned so much over this career, and I've been able to work with some really amazing people and some people who did not necessarily know what they were doing, but I learned a lot from them too. So I think if I was talking about an onstage role, I still would love to perform George from Sunday in the Park of George.
Oh,
but there's so much work that I want to do off stage.
Everyone's gagged.
But it's the thing is like that. It's the music also that you don't necessarily get to see us singing all the time. But that show and that music is always so is dear to me. But it's time for me to be on the creative side. I mean, there's so many stories that I want to tell and I want to be a part of making sure that they're told in a way that has humanity to him and has a bit of the experience that the four of us have gone through as Black artists. I want to make sure that those stories are on stages. So for me, it's about being on the other side of the creative table over this next season, this next chapter.
I love that as well. And has it been announced what you're rehearsing for now that you're doing?
I think so. I'm the associate movement director on Death of a Salesman coming
come
to Broadway.
On.
This.
Yay!
Congratulations!
Come on.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Y'all look like that. Y'all know how. Y'all know.
We,
there's not a person on this thing that is not always working. There's always an right? iron in the fire. This group, for
that's
sure.
True. And Nick, you continue to catapult towards pop star. And what role would you like to play?
I definitely my dream role of all times, and is now. It's I don't know if it could happen now, because rightfully so, Patina Miller has made it into another realm, and I'm obsessed with Patina Miller. I can't believe I haven't met her yet. She has no idea how much I'm obsessed with her. But
she's
I would like to
right now.
Well, if she's listening, girl, yeah. You have been the one for me for a very long time. I'm not even trying to be weird. It's just the facts. I would love to play the leading player. When I sat in the audience and watched her do that, I will never forget. That was one of the top three theatrical moments I've ever had. And I just have always been obsessed with that part. And when I saw, I became obsessed with her from Sister Act. And when I this was a specific moment in my life, being in the front row, and then Charlotte D'Amboise, she won't remember this, me, because I was a little kid just excited to be in the front row and I was acting out. And you know the part when they're talking to the audience and saying, you're extraordinary. Charlotte D'Amboise grabbed my face in the middle. Because we all know how we will play up for an audience member in the front row that is having a good time.
Sure.
And that was me.
We're clocking who they are and where they are.
She grabbed my face and said, "You're extraordinary." And I lost it. It was one of the most magical days of my life. So watching that, leading player, I would love to do that. And I would like to do a visual album. My own visual album one day, where I have a narrative through like a movie of music videos. That's a real dream.
Oh my gosh,
nice.
Because this is where it's happening in this room. Antoine, dream role.
Dream role would I don't know. It hasn't been written yet, but I would love for someone to Othello with the original text, but in the realm of like a Hamilton, so to speak, and I play Othello. And I also welcome me playing Frankenfurter and Rocky. And I also welcome Sweeney Todd.
Oh, I watched that.
Yes,
I watched all of that.
And Mrs. Lovett at the same time?
Yes, as Lovett, yes.
Here's the trick. They're the same person. It's all, it's a schizophrenic.
One person show, let's go.
That would be great, actually.
Sweeney Todd.
Y'all are joking. That could actually work.
For everybody, Marie, you are the lost long duke that Down Abbey didn't know they had. So that will be starring in on the London BBC. Nick Burrows will be Nat King Cole in the movie. That will be his Oscar. Laquette, you will be a cartoon superhero brought to life. Amen.
Yes!
You guys.
Claim it.
The manifestation has been made. The secret is being used. Yes. My friends, I cannot tell you how much I admire and love each and every one of you. I'm a huge fan of you on stage and off. Thank you for spending so much time with us. I appreciate you having this conversation with me and the world. I love you very much, and I hope to see you guys very, very soon. Thank you so much.
I love you.
Thank you. Love you, Ben.
Love you. Bye, beautiful people.
You just gotta love them. I love how much ground we covered in that conversation. Serious and joyful and insightful. I couldn't be more grateful to our guests. Thank you, T. Oliver Reed, Laquette Charnel, Nick Rashad Burrows, and Antoine Hopper. I love you guys very much. All right. Hey, friends, you got to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can rate us. You can review us. Also, follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast. Follow me at Ben Does Broadway on all social platforms. And if you would like to support us even more, which we beg of you to do, you can support us on Patreon. All you got to do is click the link in the liner notes. You can support us, and we're going to make exclusive behind-the-scenes content just for you. Hope that we'll see you in the Patreon world. All right, for now, I'm your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying have a great show. Bye-bye.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.